You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name is Pat Davila. With me is Dan Fry here in the studio.
How you doing, Pat?
In the man cave. And we got a special guest with us. We got Pat Archibald joining us all the way from South Carolina. How you doing, Pat?
Doing great. How about y'all?
Excellent, man. So, Pat, we've talked to you quite a bit. I've talked to you, I think, a few times on IRC, right? And also on Identica and Twitter and whatnot.
Yeah.
And you're an experienced Myth user, right? You've been using it for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I started using it, I guess, at the end of 2008, I guess, and I've got a couple of front ends, so I've got a little bit of experience.
So, what do you like about Myth?
Well, just the freedom, being able to do what you want to do with those recordings is just, the only way to go. I've tried the TiVo route and the Apple TV route and, just getting tired of being locked down and not being able to do what you want to do with your content. Myth TV, anything imaginable you can do with it.
So you've basically tried them all then. How does Apple TV compare to TiVo?
Yeah. The Apple TV, it's okay if you want to, download a movie or something and watch it. But as far as getting any content off of there or, looking at anything else besides Apple, you're out of luck with that.
So it's completely locked down, just like the TiVo is for the most part.
TiVo, I hear, is a little more hackable.
Yeah, there's ways to get some stuff off of there. Link said he's written a few scripts and whatnot to take some of that stuff off of there as well. But still, you have to do. I think you have to actually do some, process the or the video after the fact to actually be able to use it on another machine.
Yeah, I don't know if they use... I know their file systems, they use Linux file systems. I know for a while they're using EXT2.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the codec, I would think it would be standard stuff. Maybe they have some kind of a wrapper around the file.
I tried messing with it a while back and
yeah, you had TiVo too,
yeah,
right?
And it just was pointless. I was already running Myth at that point, so I said there's really no need to be trying to mess with these files that are over on the TiVo.
So. You know what it is, Apple TV, Apple, they really want you to do just buy stuff off of iTunes. That's pretty much it.
Yep.
TiVo's a little more flexible. It's geared towards, consumers, plug it in, turn it on, and just start using it and pay them.
Yeah. I mean, somebody did write a Java-based server that does, I forget what it's called, Home. They had that Home, almost like a home networking type of thing that they wanted you to do through TiVo so that you could share it out, to other TiVos. And you could then get your own content. So you could actually point it to like an IP address on your network and have like videos and pictures. The thing that I didn't like about it, there was never any streaming involved. It always had to copy everything.
Oh, really?
Download it? At least that's the way it was, I think, initially. I don't know if it's changed in recent years or not, but there's even a Linux package called Galleon out there that you can run. It's just a Java server, that allows you to point it to like a videos directory. What's that?
I had to use like a Windows program and it was locked down and you could only do certain things with it.
Yeah, that API they opened that up, and that's why this Galleon program exists. But it allows you to get access to your content, but it's still, you have to, there were some funny things that you had to do. It had to be like you had to set up like a fuse file system for it to point, to almost like symlink your audio and video through it and your pictures through it. And then it had to do some type of a processing on any video files to get it so that the TiVo unit could actually play it. So
it's basically a hack.
I think so. I mean, I found it cumbersome, and the damn thing just crashed far too often.
Really?
So I just said, screw it. There's no point in even messing with this. So I had all intentions of setting up, multiple front ends and whatnot at that point. So I said, I'm not even going to bother with this for that one box that I have.
So you
left
thought it was
there.
A little limiting. Then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what about you, Pat? What do you think about the TiVo?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good box. If you just want to record shows and watch them, It's a good box, and the interface is pretty good. You know, it's user friendly. Like I said, if you want to do anything above and beyond that, you're going to have to jump through some major hoops.
Have you used a newer TiVo box? Because in what my experience with it, the interface was very slow. It was user friendly, but very slow. You would hit a button and wait for it to pop up, and you know, do the types of menuing options.
Maybe 2 or 3 years old, so it's relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does HD, and it's fairly snappy.
I heard they're doing a major revision of TiVo. I hear they're like revving up the hardware a little bit. Supposedly they've used the same hardware since the beginning.
Yeah.
And supposedly what they're doing is they're gonna rev up the hardware a little bit, so it's a little more, a little faster processor or whatnot. I don't know what kind of hardware is it. What is it, like a MIPS processor or something in there? Or is it standard
x86? Yeah. No, I don't think it was an 86.
It's embedded. They're running some kind of embedded thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, you know, the hardware sizes have been kind of small.
Mm-hmm.
So these days, I wouldn't put anything less than a terabyte into anything, you know?
When those HD boxes came out, they were like $800, you know what I mean? Yeah, and you could only get about 20 hours of HD recording on them. So, I mean, they were very limiting, at least in my opinion. They were very limiting in what you can do with them.
Yeah, over here, the cable company, we have RCN. And I had the DVR that they had with them, and they weren't charging me, so I had it down here. I'd use it once in a blue moon.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing had a small hard drive. I don't think it had a bigger than a 120 gig hard drive in there.
It was very small.
And you couldn't get more than maybe, I don't know, 15 hours of HD recordings in it, mm-hmm. which is kind of small, you know?
Yep.
Now, they're supposedly going to like a TiVo-based system very soon.
I thought it was supposed to be this, like January, that they were going to start rolling that out, but
I don't think they have yet.
No, I haven't seen or heard anything about it.
My guess would be it'd be at least $15 to $20 extra a month for that thing. I bet you that's what they're going
to
charge.
Yeah, licenses on that. They'll have to.
Yeah, yeah. And TiVo's is so happy.
But what do they do about the boxes that don't have a hard drive in them that are just going to be their HD boxes that you are they going to provide you like a stripped down version of TiVo that you can't fast forward and rewind on that? So I mean, what's the point of changing that type of an interface around? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know either. It doesn't appeal to me.
No. Mm-mm.
I'm pretty happy. You know, I had a Popcorn Hour box for a while, and the Popcorn Hour box is a nice embedded Linux-based box. It pretty much plays everything that you throw at it. It has this embedded Sigma chip in there,
mm-hmm.
and the thing is pretty powerful. It plays back a multitude of codecs and whatnot, video and audio and everything. You know, the thing is, you really can't get like the nice integration with if you did like a Myth front end. It doesn't have the integration even if you had like an XBMC box
right.
or a Boxy box. You know, it's just a you know, stripped down front end. You know, you point to your network shares and you pull down your media. That's mm-hmm. pretty much was it. You know, they were going for like 180 range, 200. You know, nowadays you can get a Zotac box for like less than $200.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pat, you got a couple of NVIDIA Ion boxes, right?
Yeah, I got a couple of Ion front ends, and I also have a Popcorn Hour as well. But like you said, you know, you don't get the commercial skipping and stuff like that. So it's in my closet collecting dust right now. It's a good box.
Yeah, you should sell it on eBay.
Yeah.
I got about $180 for the one I had.
Go ahead.
Yeah, $180 on eBay I got for it. So I was happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what NVIDIA Ion boxes do you have? You have a Zotac AU, right? That's one. You got a couple, right?
Yeah, I've got the one in the bedroom is, I think it's close to the same box you have, the Zotac Ion Atom 330.
Right.
And then in my living room, I bought a Mercat Ion Nettop from System 76. I just felt like, you know, throwing System 76 some love.
Yeah, that's a good company. How do you like that box?
Pretty good. You know, it's right up there with the Zotac. I haven't had any problems out of it, and it took me a while to get it from System 76. I think they were backordered on the motherboards or something, but other than that, it's a great company to deal with, and, you know, it's a little more expensive than putting your own box together, but, you know, if you're not into putting the box together, System 76 is a pretty good company to deal with.
Yeah, also a lot of people, again, like those Acer Revos, those are popular. Mm-hmm. The only negative with the Acer Revo is you're paying for a Windows license.
Yeah.
And exactly. Personally, they're not getting any more of my money.
Yeah, I didn't want to do that either. I mean, They look real sweet, but I just didn't want to pay for a Windows license.
Yeah, and supposedly now I think they're starting to rev up the second generation of NVIDIA Ion boxes. So you'll see, I think originally what a lot of them had, they had like the single core 230, I think? The Intel 230, I think it was? 220 or 230?
330, isn't it?
The newer ones are the 330s. Oh, okay. A lot of them have the older ones, the single core ones. And some people said, you know, that's fine. That's all you needed for a front end.
There's actually quite a bit going on in that arena because, like, the NVIDIA Ion is based on an Intel Atom platform, and Intel now is starting to do their own embedded chipset that's going to try to compete with.
That's what I hear. NVIDIA Ion. I've been hearing about that.
So who knows what that's going to lead to? We'll see in the near future. I mean, Intel typically hasn't had the greatest luck with graphics, as we've seen in the last few Ubuntu releases and whatnot.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that was related to X being completely like redone.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of the layers and stuff in there.
But still, it's caused a bit of a black eye on the Intel graphics market. Definitely. So,
I mean, I have an Intel graphics card on my Dell XPS 1330 laptop,
mm-hmm.
and it's a beautiful display, backlit. It looks phenomenal.
Right.
And I have zero issues. The only thing is you really can't do like heavy 3D type stuff on there, like an NVIDIA card. But you know what? That's my, you know, I use that a lot of times for work and stuff, and I don't want to do that. It's you know, I do coding on there and whatnot, you know, so it's not really a big deal to me. You know, it's not like my workstation or, you know, my Mythbox, you know, where I want to get VDPAU.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be a nice thing to have on a laptop, but it's not critical to me.
Right. Actually, the next version of when they start revamping the netbooks is all going to be based on the NVIDIA Ion
platform. That's what I hear.
So that'll be pretty sweet. My wife can't stand it. She has an Acer Aspire 1, and every time she tries to load like a YouTube video or something like that, it just chugs along. It's
the
awful.
Absolute worst.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys, what kind of performance are you guys getting on your Ion boxes for Flash?
I haven't done a whole lot of Flash with it. I've watched some, you know, little stuff with Hulu and whatnot, but with the Hulu player on my Ion box. But other than that, I haven't really watched a whole lot of Flash on it.
Yeah, I've done some Hulu stuff, and sometimes it works well. Sometimes it gets a little choppy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
yeah, same here. The Ion boxes, they struggle from time to time, and even on my server in the server, I mean, you crank up Hulu, and sometimes, you know, it stutters, and it's got a quad core, so I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know whether it's the, you know, the bandwidth on my DSL connection or what it's waiting on, but it definitely still stutters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it has anything to do with your connection, because I have 10 megabits down,
and
I still have those same issues sometimes.
Right.
I think it's really is Flash just sucks.
Yep.
We'll leave it at that.
But even recently, you know, like they've come under attack, you know, quite a bit by hackers, so that people are trying to, you know,
Adobe in general, not just
that,
Flash,
right?
But a lot of their other software.
Oh yeah, yeah. So they're. Who knows what the hell you're getting anymore, you know, coming down inside of these streams, too. I mean, I don't think it's affecting us, you know, on the Linux side, you know, because it's not really being targeted there. But still, something is going on with it that just makes it such a dog. I launched Hulu the other day on my secondary back-end, front-end, you know, in my entertainment center there. And it's a dual-core machine. I watched both cores just spike. They as soon as Hulu started, the thing just, both of them were at 100%. I mean, I was watching. It was okay. It wasn't quite high definition or anything like that. It's not playing high def, but it was just, I don't even, you know, this was even just the previews that the Hulu player, you know, shows when you first go into it. It spiked right then. So it's a bear.
It was kind of like watching like HD H.264
mm-hmm.
before VDAPAU was in there.
Right, right.
It was the same kind of deal. You would watch like the CPU spike up to like 100%.
Yep.
And it would just like get choppy.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Pat, let me ask you. The first time you got VDAPAU going, what was your thoughts on that when you saw that?
Well, it just blew me away, you know, sitting there monitoring the CPU and it's not doing anything, and you're watching, you know, full 1080p HD recording. It was just awesome. So, you know, I've got VDPAU working on all my boxes. There's no other way to go right now.
Yeah, it really is delivered VDPAU, mm-hmm. man. It's really impressive.
Yep.
You know,
what was the status of Adobe and them being able to utilize VDPAU?
Windows 10.1 beta 2. That's the only thing that's working on. They're not doing anything yet for Linux or the Mac platform. So They're waiting. I guess they're waiting on some more of a common, you know, API to take advantage of the graphics acceleration.
They can do it. You know, from a technical perspective, it's doable.
Mm-hmm.
It's just them wanting to pay somebody to sit there and code it.
But there's nothing to kind of isolate them from, you know, okay, this is what NVIDIA does, this is what ATI does, this is what Intel does. There's nothing, they'd have to code it for all of them, and I think what they're looking for is just a common interface, you know, to that they can code against.
Yeah, don't get me started with ATI, man.
Yeah.
In my book, ATI still sucks. Yeah. Even though they've opened up their mm-hmm. code. They still haven't delivered as far as Linux high performance.
I don't know. I've been hearing some people talk about some ATI stuff, some of these like bleeding edge newer cards that it's working pretty well with. So I don't know. Maybe in a few years, once the prices on these types of cards come down, it might be something to look at. But I'm completely happy with what NVIDIA what NVIDIA gives me. So
with NVIDIA PU, man, there really is no option right
now.
If you're gonna do like Myth and you're gonna do like, you know, small factor, you know, Zotac Ion based boxes, man.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do NVIDIA PU. And NVIDIA PU, a lot of the people that are into like XBMC and Boxy, you know, a lot of the guys that were like running those apps on Windows mm-hmm. or Mac, they saw what the Linux version was doing. And a lot of those people like migrated over to the Linux versions just to get NVIDIA PU working.
Now, have you seen any stuttering with it or anything like that? Any artifacting, anything like that with VDPAU? Because that's a pretty common thread that I see come through on the Myth TV mailing list.
I haven't had any problems.
I haven't either. So I haven't followed them all that closely, but it's always coming through there in the updates that I see that there seems to be something, you know, responding about, you know, stuttering in VDPAU or something along that line.
The only thing I noticed difference wise, like my main Myth box down here has got a NVIDIA 8600 GT card, which is not the newest card.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the Zotac, it's got like, I think it's a, what is it, a 9400 mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one thing I noticed is with VDPU on the 8600 down here, with MPEG-2, it doesn't get as much, there's not that big of a difference as it used to be. For instance, with H.264, I'll see my CPU at like 5% mm-hmm. tops, where if I'm doing like MPEG-HD on that card, I'm seeing like maybe 20%, 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that insane amount like with H.264 stuff.
Right.
I mean, playing back, it's seamless. There's no problems whatsoever, but it's a little more CPU usage. I think that might have to do with the graphics card, the 8600 graphics card, the chipset that has in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it can do everything that the newer, more recent cards can do.
Right.
And I think that's why the impact with the MPEG-2 HD is not as big as with H.264.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, playback, it's fine. My main box is an AMD 64 2 gigahertz dual core. It's not that the biggest, fastest thing out there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I can record three shows at once and watch something else, and it keeps chugging along,
right,
man.
Yeah.
I haven't noticed any like slowdowns or like artifacts or anything like that at all. And that's pretty impressive, you know, for a machine that's not even that fast.
You can pick up for
these people who are complaining about some artifacts and stuff, they're using a different deinterlacer than what we're using. I'm using the OneField 1XHW. I don't know what y'all are using.
I have to think back what I'm using on mine.
I'm using Bob. But,
yeah, I think I'm. I think Bob? I'm. No, I think I switched from Bob. There was another one that the default for the normal profile was, and that was was it advanced?
On my Zotac, I'm using Bob.
Advanced,
definitely
temporal,
using Bob.
Yeah.
On the 8600, I might be using like advanced, I think.
Yeah. And I have no issues with that. So that's why I was wondering why there's so much. There seems to be so much chatter about it. You know.
I think the other thing is a lot of the people, they tend to like twiddle with things and mm-hmm. play with it.
Yeah.
Me, if I get the thing set up and it's working the way I like it and there's no real issues, I leave the thing alone and forget about it. And I go on my merry way, you know. I'm not going to fiddle with the settings just mm-hmm. for the sake of fiddling. I did when I first set it up just to see the differences.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the Bob one on the Zotac was the best setting.
Right.
I get the smoothest playback and whatnot.
Well, I recently put an NVIDIA 210 card in it, and you can pick those up now for, you know, between $35 and $50.
Yeah, there was somebody posted in the forum,
and this is a sign.
Fry's had a special going back like 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah,
they had it was like $30 plus a $10 rebate, so it was like $20 for an NVIDIA 210 card.
Right. I found one. It was an open box on Newegg. It was like $34.99 or something like that. Silent card, you know, passive heat sink on it. It is whisper quiet, and my box, you know, I still don't even notice the thing running, and I still get crystal clear HD, you know, everything running off that box using no CPU utilization. That's why, and when I see all these posts coming back and forth about the stuttering, it just kind of makes me wonder, you know, are they using like one of these older chipsets? And because that's why I upgraded from the 8400 anyway, because I was noticing I had a line that went right through the middle of the screen. I had a bunch of things all happening with it, and I know no matter what setting I use, I could not get rid of it. And I figured, well, it's probably just this card is just not powerful enough to handle this stuff.
The other thing with NVIDIA I noticed is, like, depending on the older models in the 8000 series, mm-hmm. and true of the 9000 series too, when they would go from different versions, different revs and whatnot, it seems they like they took away and added different things that it was capable of doing. And, you know, depending on which version, how much memory, which chipset, which manufacturer, mm-hmm. you get discrepancies going from one to the other.
Yep.
You know, let me ask you guys, with my Zotac box, I'm running off like a 4 gig thumb drive,
mm-hmm.
and it's a little slow booting up, but once it gets going, you know, it's pretty much seamless. It's like, you know, same thing as my main box. The menuing, going through the menus is quick and everything.
Yeah.
It's pretty quick and snappy and whatnot. I haven't noticed anything. Now, Dan, you're running off what, a flash drive?
It's a 30 gig, SATA 2 OS, OCZ Vertex, Solid state drive. It boots.
That's fast.
It boots in 4 seconds. I mean, literally, it's up to the menu in 4 seconds, and that's even negotiating over the wireless end network and everything like that to the back end. So, I mean, it is quick, you know, to get up and running.
You see, I'm going over a wire connection. I ran mm-hmm. Ethernet up there, and that makes a huge difference.
Oh yeah, believe me. I wish if I had a way that I could put a wire up there without having to rip open every wall, you know, between there and where the router actually is, I would do it. But I don't want to go and start ripping apart everything at this point. After I've only had this basement and whatnot finished for what is it like two, three years now, so I didn't need to rip open anything else yet.
I hear, pal. Let me ask you, what about your front ends? Are you doing wired wirelessly, and also the Zotac stuff? What are you using the boot off of? Are you doing diskless? Or are you doing thumb drive? What kind of setup do you have?
In both mine, I've got a cheap SSD. It's a brand name Super Talent SATA 2, and I think both of them are 16 gig apiece. I think I bought them for like $75, and I think they're even cheaper than that now. So they're not real high quality. They're not the Intel SSD or anything like that, but they work pretty well and they boot up fast. And as far as the LAN goes, I've got the gig Ethernet wired. I don't do anything wirelessly as far as the front ends go.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gigabit wired connections are pretty snappy.
Yeah, if I had a way, I mean, eventually also want to throw another one then up in our bedroom. So right now I'm looking at just building up this wireless end network to handle all of that traffic. And so far, since I've switched over there's some quality settings in this TrendNet router that allow you to push, you know, the HD content, you know, video content, you know, anything. You could even isolate it out so it's like Skype or whatever you want it to be, so that it gives dedicated bandwidth to those types of applications.
The type of transports that
exactly.
you're using.
Yeah,
you can specify which ones to give higher priority.
Exactly.
To.
Exactly, and I've disabled all the legacy stuff. I've disabled all like DHCP and all that on the network. Everything's fine after that.
That's
so,
cool.
I mean, I do not have a single issue pushing any HD from, you know, over the wireless end network up from the basement to the sunroom right now where that box currently lives. So,
right.
And they're opposite ends of the house. And I still see, if I log into I have a TrendNet access point, which also works as a bridge right there on the, if I log into that guy's interface, I still see I'm at about, you know, 75-80%, you know, signal strength and quality going through there, and it's more than enough to push the content over the network.
So you're happy with the wireless?
Oh yeah, it's been working good.
Yeah.
I actually want to get a couple more of these access points. One to work in a wireless distribution mode, so I'm just going to set that basically in the middle of the house to act as a repeater for everything else.
Right.
And then one is going to also then go up into the bedroom so that it can replace an old 802.11 connection that's sitting up there. So.
Now, with N, 802.11n, is it like 802.11g, where if you have a B client, everything drops down?
it works in two different modes. You can have wireless N working with B and G devices, or you can have it working with A devices. So at least that's how this particular model is working. They do have concurrent dual band ones where you can actually push out a 2.4 and a 5 gigahertz signal at the same time. I think it's just two SSIDs, and I think they just bridge together somehow. I could be wrong about that, though. I have mine set up in B and G and N mode right now because I have, like, a wireless printer. I have my wife's netbook. You know, I have a bunch of legacy wireless, you know, stuff that's on the network that until I can upgrade, I'm going to have to run this way. The other thing, too, is that it no longer supports WEP. It supports WEP, but you drop down from wireless N speeds. So if you want to run security with wireless N, you have to run it with WPA or something greater than that. You know, so right now I'm actually just running open. I just, you know, pretty much locked down very basically by, you know, only having, you know, manual IP addresses on the network. And eventually I'm going to probably put on like some MAC filtering or something like that. But I know it's not really a deterrent. I mean, people can, you know, spoof that stuff. So. But in my neighborhood, I'm not too worried about it.
Ask you, as far as the TrendNet, how much port forwarding can you do with the firmware that's on there?
You got a lot of control over it. There's no set number. I mean, it's gone from that, you know, in the Linksys ones, they give you just a list of like empty boxes. Yeah. Me, I can just keep adding to a list. I haven't noticed that there's any type of a limit on that. So,
yeah, I have an old Linksys that I've hacked. The different replacement firmwares on her.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that wireless router for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay for what I'm doing. I'm not doing any videos.
Right.
So I really
right.
don't care about it that much. It works for me.
Yep.
Eventually, I'll upgrade it, you know, whenever that happens. So.
I've been digging these TrendNet products lately. They got a whole slew of them, whether it's from wired to wireless. They got some storage ones. They've got power line adapters if you want. I mean, they've got quite a few of them, and I've been digging their products lately.
You have to work on them, getting them as a sponsor.
Yeah, tell me about it. Hey, if you're out there, TrendNet, and you're listening.
I'll have to get them.
I need three more, wireless and access points, you know, whatever else you want to throw
silicon
in there.
Silicon dust, too, is the other way.
Give me that extra, you know, that gigabit, what is it, they have like a RAID, you know, RAID box that you can just throw two, you know, a couple terabyte drives in it. So, hey, throw
like
me one.
Like a Drobo?
Yeah, basically. But throw me one of them around, too, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Pat, what kind of capture devices are you using?
I'm using the AC home run connected to a antenna up in my attic. And, you know, get the standard ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, PBS, get all that stuff over the air. And that's beautiful stuff there. And then I've got a PVR 150 card connected to Comcast analog cable TV. So, you know, get stuff like Comedy Central and stuff like that that I watch off of that. But most of my content is over the air, so pretty happy with that.
Has Comcast given you any indication as to when they're going to cut over to all digital?
No, I was reading up a little bit on that today, and the, you know, everything I saw was they're shooting towards the end of this year to you know, get everybody over onto digital. But I haven't heard anything in my area, in the Charleston area, so I don't know when it's coming.
Yeah, that's a common thread. All the cable companies are like killing analog.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, you know, our cable company, they killed the analog. And they went from like 30 HD channels to like over 100 overnight, literally.
But open channels on the network, too. We went from, what, 8 to now, you know, 40, 50 of them, so.
Yeah, most of them is crap, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yep.
The ones that are
but relevant. they are pushing all the HD channels.
At least they're doing,
you know,
that
are broadcast right now. So it's not like they took anything away from us. They actually gave us something more. So
yeah, I'm pretty happy with the quality of the picture that we're getting from the HD from RCN. Like, we were just watching my new Samsung upstairs, and the channels look good. Like, I noticed when I was looking shopping around for TVs, and I went into this one shop that's in like New York, New Jersey area, and they had a direct TV feed, and on like the 720p sets, it looked okay, but like on anything that was 1080 bigger than like 40 inches, it looked like absolute crap, mm-hmm. man.
Yeah.
Lots of compression, lots of artifacts, digitization. Whenever there was like movement, it just looked awful. Mm-hmm. I thought our cable looked way better than that, and over the air looks way better than that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope they don't start messing around with over the air and trying to split those signals up and degrading the quality, because right now it looks great. I hope they don't mess with it.
Well, they had a bunch of issues around here, like the local ABC affiliate. You know, when they did this whole cutover, I think they did something strange, like they switched it from
UHF to
VHF, and then all of a sudden there was anybody who was out. I don't know what the limit on the distance is from where they're broadcasting from to how far out it was, but all the people in, I think from like Philadelphia to Reading, anybody in like Reading who was using that over the air signal to get the local Philadelphia ABC, they were all cut off. And then you kind of draw a circle from there on over, you know, and that pretty much affected everybody like that. And they just got, you know, complained to, and the FCC had to grant them like special permission to broadcast at like three times their allowed signal strength so that they could get to these people. So, because everybody just all overnight, they just lost everything.
That's
so
awful, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got burned by that when they went, a lot of the stations before the digital cutover were doing a UHF. And to get UHF, at least in my area, all I need is one of those little triangle antennas you can set on your desk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody went to VHF, and then I had to go out to Lowe's and get an antenna and stick it in the attic. But the UHF signal was definitely better, but I'm doing okay now.
How do you like in the HD home run?
It's awesome. I mean, it's, you know, it's dead simple to hook up. You just hook it up to your feed and put it on the network and, you know, set up Tell Myth TV to go look at it, and it's sitting right there. So it's super easy. You know, it just sits in my closet, and I never have to reboot it, never have to do anything with it. Yeah. It just sits there. Now, I have gone through and just, you know, updated the firmware whenever a new firmware comes out, but I really haven't had any issues on it. I just want to have the latest and greatest. But, yeah, it's a great piece of machinery there.
Yeah, I've been loving it so far since I've had it. And I think around Thanksgiving, like on Black Friday, they were running specials. You can get that for like on sale for about $125. And if you see it on sale again for that price, I highly recommend it. I mean, I paid around $140 for it, and I'm happy with what I paid for it.
I almost had one for $90 the other day on eBay.
Really?
Yeah.
No, they are selling a single tuner model, so make sure it's
the dual tuner. The guy said that he had bought it. He was using it for a month, and then they were moving, and his wife told him he had to switch over to the cable company. So he actually put that in his eBay thing.
Yeah, you didn't know. You can use it with the cable company thing.
But no, she wanted the actual cable company.
That's what I'm
DVR
doing.
And whatnot.
I'm using mine with my cable company for the open channels.
Yeah.
That's what I use it for. So you can use it with digital cable. As long as it's unencrypted, you'll pick them up, you know? It's nice. You can use it for both, for over the air and digital cable.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a pretty flexible device.
Yep.
And they seem to be pretty Linux friendly there. And it's real dead easy to get it working in Ubuntu if you go looking. Even the firmware updaters is in the Ubuntu repos, and also the little utility for like doing like channel changing, not even using it with Myth, just like from like workstation.
Right.
And I did that on my workstation, and it works fine. I can watch shows off my workstation using that little tuner app.
Mm-hmm.
Works fine.
Yeah, those apps are pretty nice because you can test your signal strength coming in over the air, and those help me out a lot, you know, to make sure my antenna was in the right place or whatever. So those are handy too.
Yeah, let me ask you, with over-the-air, as far as the directional, what are you using, like a multi-directional, a mono-directional? What are you using?
No, it's fixed. Pretty much all of our stations are, you know, pretty much in one area. So I just pointed towards that, pointed towards the east, basically, and I picked up everything I need.
How far out are you from the towers, do you know?
I guess it's about 30 miles or so.
Yeah, that's what I hear. 30 miles is a good distance. I hear that once you get like in the 40 to 50 mile range, it kind of gets a little spotty. You know,
it's flat here in South Carolina, so it's not like I got to go over any hills or mountains or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's a straight shot.
Over here, where we're at in Lehigh Valley, it's a weird spot. It's like we're like, you know, like 100 miles direct west of New York City, and we're like 60, 70 miles, depending on where you are in the Lehigh Valley, away from Philadelphia. So, and there's some mountains in between, depending on where you're at. So you might not get certain stations.
I live right at the base of a mountain, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd be blocked off completely by one side of it.
So for like in our area, it's not 100%, you know. That's why a lot of people go with the cable or the satellite TV. But
even where I live, I think I mentioned this a while back, you know, there's a house in my neighborhood that's got four dishes on there so they could get satellite. Four dishes on there, and this is a townhouse community. Okay, how many TVs do they have in there? But if that's just to get the signal in because of like artifacting or whatever. They're all pointing in like different directions too. So
well, I've had DirecTV and I've also had Dish Network. In this house here, I've had Dish Network. Mm-hmm. When I first moved in, that's what I had. And to get like the local stations, I had to get a second dish to point it to the different satellite.
Okay. But you didn't need four of them.
No, it was two. It was like yeah. the main dish. I got like 95% of what
yeah,
I wanted.
Right.
And then the last five to 10% for like the local stations.
Right.
I needed a second dish.
Okay.
Now I've heard that you know DirecTV and Dish Network they both updated, so you only need one dish now. But for a while, yeah, that's what I had two different dishes. So I'm happy with RCN. You know.
For as much as we bitch about it.
Yeah, we've bitched about them before, but I'm pretty happy with the upgrade yeah. that they did.
Mm-hmm.
I got two HD cable boxes now. You know, I have my main box down here in the man cave, and that's where, like, my main capture is either the HD Home Run for the unencrypted, like, network shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I use that heavily, you know. And then for everything else, I got my PVR 1212. And mm-hmm. I've just been so happy with the PVR 1212, man. The quality of the recordings looks fabulous.
Right, me too.
For our you know cable company, it looks great. I'm very happy with it. You know, I
look, if Comcast goes all digital on my end, I'll have to be picking up a 1212, I guess.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately for people that have like DirecTV and Dish Network, that's like your only option.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sad, you know, but that's the reality. But you can't go, you know like your setup, you can do a fairly low cost setup where you know you get an HD Home Run or even a single tuner PCI card. You can get over-the-air stuff, and it's nice yep. quality. You know, it's good stuff. You don't have to spend $1,000 on you know your Myth box. You can go you know $300-$400 and get a decent box just to get you going. And later on, if you want to add you know nicer tuners, you know more tuners, you know a bigger hard drive, you know newer graphics card, you can do that.
Yep.
It's flexibility. It's you know it's being able to do what you want to do. You know you can go low end and build up from as you go. You know
I'm forever tweaking.
Plus, you can add front ends too. You know, I don't know about you guys. When I did my front end setup, it was dead simple, man.
Oh yeah,
you
definitely.
Know, I got my hooked up like an external DVD drive.
Mm-hmm.
I popped the disc in there. I stuck my thumb drive in there. I picked, the front end only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it did the install. You know, it asked me what my IP address of my main box was and my password of my database.
Yep.
That's it.
That's it.
And I see everything now. It's not that hard, yeah. You know.
I like doing the regular Ubuntu install with so I can get a full GNOME desktop and then coming back later and adding Mythbuntu on top of it. You know, just install the Myth Control Center and then come in there and install the pieces that way. But either way, it's dead simple nowadays.
Do you do that even on your front ends?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just install the full GNOME, you know, Ubuntu 9.10, and then if I don't have Myth, you know, called up, I can use it, you know, to check email or do whatever. I just, you know, like the GNOME desktop so that you know, whatever machine I'm on, it's all the same interface or whatever. So that's the only way I do it. But either way works. Let me ask y'all, are y'all using the Mythbuntu auto build?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do y'all stay current with the updates or you...
Yes.
Yep.
Check it every month, or
yep. I've had the same issue that you mentioned about anytime you get like a full update of the packages, MythWeb, you have to go in and reconfigure the password every single time they do like a full update.
I don't set a password on it.
Yeah, you don't care. I do.
No.
I do because sometimes I pop holes through my firewall and I come in remotely.
I do that too, but I mean, somebody would have to know that I'm specifically running MythWeb, you know, there and know my IP address and this and that. So.
Yeah, well, I assume you're running Apache on a different port, right? Because RCM blocks 80.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have to run.
Something else. Yeah. Yeah, but I've seen the same issue you were describing, Pat, when we were talking.
Okay, yeah.
It's not just you.
good. But so how often do y'all install updates? I mean, it's pretty frequent, isn't it?
Yeah, they come down. I think they push them
like
twice a week or so. You know, I don't know. That's why I started looking into like that cluster SSH so that I could just pop on real quick, hit all the boxes at one time, and I'm done. You know, typically what I've been noticing lately is that when the little... little updater icon pops up on like the let's say my kid's watching a show or something like that. It'll stay there for the whole duration of the
really?
Show until you exit out of it. Yeah, I don't know if that's an outstanding issue right now or what, but I've been noticing that lately.
I don't notice that.
Yeah, it just I get the little pop up. You know when
mine they pop up and they go away.
No, For me, it's been sticking around.
It could be check out your update system update settings.
Yeah, I'll have to look.
Go look in there.
And see what's off. I thought I had them disabled, but who knows?
Yeah.
I SSH into them every day for the most part, anyway. So looking at different things, I always know whenever there's an update coming through there.
All right. So to get Pat, well, the main thing we're talking to you tonight, you know, we've talked about some good topics. Is you've been playing around with Mythmote on your. On your Android phone, right? And you put together a couple of nice little videos, right?
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty neat app. You know, just being able to control your Myth front end using your phone is a pretty neat idea. And it's a sweet app. I mean, it's got everything you need as far as remote control. I don't think I'd use it permanently as a remote because, you know, you don't have that tactile feel. You can't really feel where, you know, number 9 is or whatever, but... you know, if you're in a pinch or whatever, you just whip out your phone and go to town. So it's a pretty sweet app.
Well, I want to say that as soon as I saw you post the links to those in Buzz there, that I went and checked them out, and the quality of your video is really, really nice. I want to say that up front.
Yeah, what kind of camera are you using for those demos?
Yeah, it's a Sony HF20, I believe it is.
Oh. It's a pretty good camera.
Yeah, it's HD camera. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I really liked the whole presentation that you did with them there. I thought that was really nice.
Cool, I appreciate that. It's a lot of fun. You know, I love promoting Myth TV because I think it's such a great product, and you know, I don't think you know everybody knows about it, or maybe they haven't given it another chance. Maybe they tried it 5 or 6 years ago or something, and haven't tried it again. But it's just an awesome product, and anything I can do to promote it, I'll definitely do it.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. But back to Mythmote, like I was showing Dan before when he first came over, and it's really responsive. That's the thing that really stands out, going over the Wi-Fi connection. And basically what you're doing is you're opening up like a telnet port, right, through Myth, and it's just taking commands like it was a keyboard. And
yeah, I think it's just, you know, a regular TCP socket. I think you could do it via telnet command, you know, if you knew the commands or whatever. But,
yeah, there's a project... There's a project on for the Nokia N800s that had it, or any of the MAMO devices, that you just make sure that the telnet port is enabled in your setup, and as soon as you can hop onto the network, you point to an IP address and tell it the port. If you've changed the port, you can just make the remote calls, you know, just as you were, you know, on a regular remote control.
Yeah, with the Mythmote, it's pretty nice. You could set up like profiles for different locations. Like, you know, I have my two spots. I have the family room, and then I have down here. You just flick which one you want. It does the connection, and you're on your way.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's a real nice app. The guy who wrote it, he updated it fairly recently, and he redid like a lot of the menus and the buttons and whatnot. And it seems to run a lot better, and it looks a lot better too. It's really sharp looking, and I'm pretty happy with it. The guy did a nice job. I tried getting a hold of him. He hadn't responded to me, so maybe we can have him on in the future and talk to him in a little more detail about what he's doing.
Great.
With Mythmote, and that's a GPL app, so you're free to go to Google Code.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the website there for Mythmote, and you can look at all his source code. It's freely available. He's GPL'd it, so if you want to, you know, look at it and see how Android stuff is programmed.
I wonder if he would be able to take advantage of like the location APIs that are available for the Android, and if he could use that to automatically select which one you happen to be at. Like if you're in,
I don't know. It's
pretty close proximity, so I imagine.
Yeah, it's a little too close.
Yeah,
I don't think he'll know between your first and second floor in your house.
Yeah, that's true. And if they're right above each other in the house,
From a GPS standpoint, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I was thinking about that at work. It'd be nice if when I walked into our assembly room where we have all our meetings, that the Nexus One would just know that I'm in the assembly room and I need to be in silent mode or something. But like I said, I don't think the GPS is that precise.
Not to go off on just an Android topic here alone, but there is an app. I don't recall the name of it, but it is aware of where you are at, so that if you go to a location and says I'm here at work, it'll shut your ringer off and, you know, maybe connect to their Wi-Fi, you know, and then as you drive home, it sees that you've parked, you know, at home, and then it automatically switches over to connect to your Wi-Fi, and you know, it can do things like increase the volume of the ringer. I forget what the name of the application is, but there's an application out there that's doing just that.
I have to look for it.
Yeah.
How do you like in your phone, Pat? That seems a pretty nice phone, right? The Nexus.
Yeah, man, it is really great. You know, it's based on Linux, and it's open, and there's pretty much an app to do everything. And you know, I can transcode a MIPS TV recording and connect the phone via USB to my back end and just slap that recording right on there, and it's going to play. You know, there's no hoops to jump through. It's just, you know, wide open. It's a really neat device.
Are you using the MIPS export to do that?
No, it's going to FFmpeg.
Oh, okay.
I'm just doing a command line FFmpeg.
Because you can set up, you can actually set up MIPS export to do that. You can give it the FFmpeg command, and then it just produces an RSS feed, and you can have your podcatcher, you know, go and just download it for you as you're on your network.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I don't know, you know, how much I'd be watching on the phone. There was one night that we were without power. Here we were out without power for about 2 hours, and I forgot I had an episode of I think it was House or 24 or something on my phone that I hadn't watched, and heck, I just plugged in the headphones, the earplugs, and watched that while there was no power. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm jealous of the Nexus. I have a G1 that I've had for like about a year or so, and looking at like the Droid and the Nexus. You know, the displays on those two phones are really sweet, and they're much, you know, the Nexus especially, it looks so crisp and clear, and it's a much higher resolution than any of the other phones that are out in the market, and, you know. So I tried your FFmpeg command that you posted on the forum. I just lowered the resolution for what the G1 has, and it worked fine. I didn't have any issues whatsoever. You know, as long as you have the right resolution for your phone, it'll you know, FFmpeg will work fine.
Yeah, it works good, man. I love it. I even take it, you know, I do a little bit of running during the week before I go to work, and I'll attach it to my arm, and there's an app, I think it's called Sports Tracker Pro or something like that. It'll track, you know, where you run and how fast you're running and what the temperature is outside, and then when you get back,
cool.
You can post that up to Twitter or Identica, or, you know, and then you can look at it on the web, and, man, this phone, it can do anything, man. It's really nice.
Do you know if that hooks up to a site called Daily Burn?
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
It's a site that'll track a lot of that stuff for you, whether it's, you know, your weight, your nutrition, that type of stuff. And you can even get a bathroom scale that will over Wi-Fi automatically update that for you.
Man, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, all this stuff gets a little too much, I think, sometimes. You know, pretty soon there'll be you know, they'll have implants that you can inject below your skin that'll do all that monitoring.
Bring it on.
No thanks, man. I'll pass on that.
Yeah, there is a point where you got to say, okay, this
enough is enough.
Too much.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I've been loving my Android phone, you know, and I'm looking to upgrade within the next few months to either the Nexus or something similar. They just had that World Mobile Conference in Barcelona, and HTC is just putting out some beautiful phones, man. Mm-hmm. They really got some nice stuff. But Motorola's been doing some nice work too, and they're going to be the first one available on AT&T network. So
yep.
the backflip, so you know,
it's a pretty nice looking phone.
Yeah, it's only like $100, so mm-hmm. it's not a bad deal at all. So, and they're going to have an HTC
coming out next month, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Few weeks. Yeah.
I just bought my wife a new phone right before Valentine's Day, and then like 3 days later they announced it. I've been told. I said, "We just wait. The Android phones are coming." She's like, "I want a new phone," and lo and behold, I buy the phone, and then 2 days after they announced that so I said, "Let's send it back. You use Gmail and all that stuff anyway. Let's get the Android phone." So she's right on board with that. Boxed it up, sent it right back, and we're getting that one the day it comes out. So.
Good deal. So you can give us a rundown. You can do a review for us.
I will.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah, so.
I did see, too, where is it on? I think it was on Engadget or something like that. The CEO of Sony was standing up there saying, yeah, we were asked to do like the Nexus one, and they turned it down. And now HTC is like blowing up, you know, with all this
HTC, you know, HTC was like this little company from like Taiwan that nobody heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And now everybody knows them. They have like commercials on TV and stuff. It's they've done phenomenal work. And the thing about the HTC phones is they're very hackable. There's a huge hacking community.
Yep.
You know, it started with the G1, but like some of the other phones too, people are all over it, man. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of stuff with them. You know, they're pretty open. You can do a lot with them. I mean, I don't know how flexible the Motorola's are with that type of thing, but HTC's, man, they're pretty wide open.
Yeah, I'm sold, man. It's a well-made phone, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, I was also a big fan of the Nokia stuff, you know, like the N800. I was just really disappointed the way, you know, the whole N900 thing turned out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this, they're you know, Nokia for like their high-end stuff, the N800 line. And, you know, it was a well-built device, really good quality stuff. Personally, I'm just, like, disappointed in, like, how everything just kind of just evolved for them.
Yeah.
You know, they came out first before anybody else. You know, they had, like, such a... This is before the iPhone even came out.
Mm-hmm.
They had the N800 tablet out, the 770, the N810. And they just kind of, like, took their foot off the pedal and just kind of, like, sat back. You know, and it really becomes clear that, you know, what Nokia cares about is the... Symbian and all these low-end phones, mm-hmm. and these crappy low-end phones that they sell. And it's just so disappointing, you know. And they did this thing now with the merging MAMO with Mobilin.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it might turn out to be pretty good, but I'm just disappointed in how they went with everything.
Mm.
You know, they were just so far ahead of everybody, and they just kind of gave up, you know.
Yeah.
It's just disappointing.
That's Symbian. That's all open source now, too.
They opened it up, but it's crap.
It's ugly, what, man. 15 years old, isn't it?
Crap, Symbian. Yeah. I've had Symbian phones. It's shit.
I've never had one. I don't have any experience.
They're talking about putting Qt on it. Now, Qt is a beautiful framework and everything. Mm. I mean, yeah, that might help and everything, but, you know, you can't polish a turd. A turd is still a turd if you got to go leaf on it, you know?
Yeah.
It's not going to help it much. Yeah, I'm all about the Android on the phone right now. But, well, it was nice talking to you, Pat. I really enjoyed talking to you. You said you're going to Self this year, right?
Yeah, how about y'all?
I'm going. Last year, I didn't go because my nephew was literally graduating from high school that very day. So I'm definitely going to go. And
I'm going to try. My daughter's birthday. My daughters, they were born the same day, 2 years apart. My daughter's birthday is the following week, so I gotta see what's going on. Yeah,
take a week of vacation. Yeah. I'm definitely going. I might even be presenting there. So. You know, even if I don't present, I'm still probably going to go.
Mm.
So I'm looking forward to going down there. I heard Dave and his crew put together a really nice show last year, and it sounds like this year they're stepping it up a notch. Mm. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it should be good, man. We'll have to drink a beer together.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, if I present, it's going to be on Myth TV, so I might be asking you for you know, some of the over the air stuff. I'll see what I can pull in.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Let me know if you want me to bring some equipment or whatever. I'm wide open.
I will do that.
Fun time.
If I do, I put it for like what they're doing this year at Self, they're gonna have on Sunday. They're doing in-depth presentations. So what I pitched to do for them was I do an hour talk where I do a demonstration of it, and then in the second hour do an actual install using some equipment I got, mm-hmm. and maybe, you know, pulling in some over-the-air stuff, you know, right there in front of everybody. That would be the way to do it. So I haven't heard back from them either way. But if I do get selected, that's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to have to take you up on maybe an antenna or two.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be glad to bring, you know, I've got a nice LED LCD that, you know, I can even bring that if you want me to or whatever you need. I'll be glad to bring it.
That'd be awesome. I appreciate you offering. All right. Well, it was awesome talking to you, man. We'll have to talk to you again in the future.
All right, y'all keep up the good work, man. I sure enjoyed the show.
Yep, and we'll put those, you know, you actually already have them on the forum. What we'll do is for this episode, I'll put those links in there too, so people can check out the two really nice videos that you put together mm-hmm. for MythMount, how to set it up and demoing it.
And definitely let us know if you put anything else out that we can at least promote it, that it's out there.
Definitely.
Okay, will do, man. I sure will.
All right, man. Take care, Pat.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
We'll see you.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, that was Pat Archibald. Nice guy, and he's pretty experienced, and he knows his stuff, and it was nice talking to him.
I think he was one of the first people following me, too, from, you know, once we started doing the show.
Yeah, yeah.
That was specifically related to the show, so.
Yeah, so wrapping up, you got any little things to finish off with?
No, I got to get over this hangover, but otherwise I'll be ready to go next time.
You party animal, yeah.
Yeah, celebrating a birthday of a friend with a bunch of people last night, and it's been a rough day.
I know how that goes. Yeah.
My wife, I think she's still napping.
You know? at 9 o'clock at night?
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, everybody, you know, shoot us an email. Let us know what you're thinking.
Yep.
Things you want us to cover. Any suggestions? Maybe we can do a listener show again. I'm definitely going to try to line up Cecil Watson from Lynn Hess. I know he's at scale right now. This is like his big deal.
Yeah.
He's based in L.A.
Right.
So this is he always goes to that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to shoot him an email this week and see if he comes back to me. And I'd like to get him on next, I think. And definitely the Fedora guys, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm going to get them on for Mythdora. You know, So it'll be nice to talk to them. And maybe do another listener feedback show again. That was a lot of fun. Everybody liked that, and we'll do that again. You guys can email us. I'm Pat at mythtvcast.com.
I'm Dan at mythtvcast.com.
We're on Twitter. We're on Buzz. We're on Identica. Yep. You name it, we're there.
Hit us up.
Yep. So, everybody, thanks for spending the time to talk to us, and we will talk to you real soon.
Later.
Take care.
Century, our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
We must ask ourselves, we who are so proud of our accomplishments, what is our place in the cosmic perspective of life? The cosmic perspective of
life. The exploration of the cosmos is a voyage of self-discovery.
As long as there have been humans, we have searched for our place in the cosmos.
Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
As the ancient mythmakers knew, we're children equally of the earth and the sky. In our tenure on this planet, we've accumulated dangerous evolutionary baggage. We've also acquired passion for others, love for our children, and a great, soaring, passionate intelligence, the clear tools for our continued survival.
We must ask ourselves, we were so proud of our accomplishments. What is our place in the cosmic perspective of life?
We could be in the middle of an intergalactic conversation, and we wouldn't even know. Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
We've begun at last to wonder about our origins, star stuff, contemplating the stars, tracing that long path. Our obligation to survive and flourish is owed not just to ourselves, but also to that cosmos, ancient and vast, from which we spring.
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
Think of how many stars, planets, and kinds of life there may be in this vast and awesome universe.
Century. Our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
Psst, psst, oi, over here. Do you want to buy this?
It's the centre of the open source universe. I picked it up last year in Wolverhampton. Only one careful owner. It's a bargain. Oi! Oi, come back! Oh. I'm gonna have to find something to do with this. Hold on a minute. Yes, that's right. On the 1st and 2nd of May this year, Liverpool is the only place to be for anyone interested in free software, free culture, and free thinking. It's the second live OggCamp event, organised by the Linux Outlaws and the Ubuntu UK podcast. We've taken the mantle from Lug Radio Live and we're not giving it back. The 1st and 2nd of May 2010 at the Blackie, Liverpool. Visit oggcamp.org for more details. Also join us on Friday, April 30th for a special free culture gig. Kick off the weekend in style with some great live music. But you might want to leave your hubcaps at home.
Join us for the 2010 Southeast Linux Fest as we once again celebrate Linux and open source software in the GNU/South. Due to the overwhelming response last year, this year's event will be bigger, better, and longer. SELF 2010 will take place Friday, June 11th through Sunday, June 13th at the Spartanburg Marriott at Renaissance Park in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Be there for UbuCon, Fedora Activity Day, BSDA Certification, Drupal Camp, multiple parties featuring Dual Core as well as the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000 as Riff Tracks, and an even more expansive group of superb speakers, sponsors, and exhibitors. SELF is free to attend, but hurry and register today to lock in the special discount room rate at the hotel. Register today at southeastlinuxfest.org.